Taoism is not a religion in the ordinary sense of the term. It is not a so-called religion. It is authentically religious. But to be authentically religious, it has to be basically scientific. Science and religion are separate only as far as their direction is concerned, but not in their approach. Religion can be scientific without being a science. Science can be religious without being a religion. Tao is scientific without being a science. Science means trying to know the objective world without any prejudice, without any a priori conclusions. The same is true about the inner world, the subjective world. One should approach it also without any conclusions. A scientist cannot be a Hindu or a Mohammedan or a Christian. If he is, then he is not scientific. At least in his scientific endeavor, he should put aside all his prejudices. If Galileo remains a Christian, then he cannot discover the truth that the sun does not move around the earth. If Copernicus remains a Christian, even while he is doing his scientific research, then he cannot go beyond the Bible. And the Bible is 2000 years old. It contains the science of those days. It is very primitive. It is bound to be so. All religious scriptures contain certain facts which they should not contain. They are not religious facts. They are concerned with the objective world. But in old days, everything was compiled in religious scriptures. They were the only scriptures. Religious scriptures have functioned in the world for thousands of years as encyclopedias. Everything that was known, was discovered, was theorized, was collected in them. The Vedas in India are called Sanhitas. Sanhita means a compilation, a collection. Their function was exactly that of Encyclopedia Britannica. All kinds of things are compiled in them. The literature of those days, the science of those days, the astronomy of those days, the geography, the history, the art, everything that was possibly known has been compiled. As man has progressed, everything has become more and more specialized. Science means the search of truth in the objective world. Religion means the search of truth in the subjective world. Just as there is a world outside you, there is a world inside you too. And of course the inside world is far more significant because it is your inside. It is your very being. It is your subjectivity. But about the inner world, we are still very unscientific. We still live through beliefs. About the outside world, we have become a little more mature. We are ready to drop any belief. If a certain fact is discovered which goes against our older theories, we discard the older theories in favor of the new discovery. But the same is not true about the inner. About the inner we have very deep clinging. Tao is in that way a scientific approach about the inner. You can call it the science of the subjective, the science of being. This is one of the most significant things to remember while we will be meditating over these sutras of Kosuan. The second thing to remember is that Tao is the first revelation, realization of the fact that existence is polar. No other religion has been so clear about this tremendously significant fact. Existence is polar means existence is not logical, it is dialectical. It is not Aristotelian, it is Hegelian. Logic is simple. Logic is linear. Dialectics is a little more complex. It is not simple. Because dialectics is possible only if the opposite is also involved in it. If the opposite is not there, there will be no dialectics. There can be no electricity without two poles, the positive and the negative. Electricity is not logical. It is utterly illogical. It is dialectical. There can be no humanity without the masculine energy and the feminine energy. Just think of a humanity consisting only of men or women. It will die. It will not be able to live. It will not have any energy to live. Energy is created by the friction with the opposite. The Hegelian formulation is thesis needs antithesis. unless there is thesis opposed by antithesis, there is no dynamism. Life becomes stagnant. Matter is possible only if there is consciousness, and vice versa. The sky and the earth, God and existence, the day and night, summer and winter, birth and death, these are polarities opposed to each other. But the opposition is only apparent. Deep down they are complementaries. What Hegel discovered just 300 years before, Taoists had discovered almost 5,000 years before. They were the pioneers of dialectics. They were the first dialecticians of the world. They contributed one of the most important insights into existence. You will find it everywhere. Life cannot exist even for a single moment without its opposite. Because it depends on the opposite, the opposition is only apparent. Deep down they are complementaries. They have to be. They depend on each other. Man is not man without a woman. The woman is not woman without a man. They depend on each other. That's why there is something missing in a homosexual or a lesbian relationship. There is no dialectics. The homosexual relationship is far more logical, remember. And because it is logical, it is simple. Because it is logical, there is less complexity about it. Less conflict in it. It is not accidental that the homosexuals are called gay people. They are gay. They are happier than the heterosexual people. Because there is no conflict. A man can understand another man more easily than he can ever understand a woman. A woman can understand another woman very easily than she will be ever able to understand a man. Because man is a totally different existence. Their ways differ. Their thinkings differ. They function from different centers. To each other they look absurd. The man functions through the intellect. The woman functions through intuition. The man goes through reasoning about everything. The woman simply jumps on the conclusion without going through any reasoning. The man is simply amazed. He cannot find any clue. He may have lived with the woman his whole life, still the woman remains a mystery. And the same is true for the woman. The man remains a mystery. She cannot understand simple things which she can see clearly, that is, smoking can bring cancer. Why you go on smoking? Drinking alcohol will kill you sooner. Then why you are poisoning yourself? Mulla Nasruddin's wife was telling him, when he was drinking whiskey one night, she told him, I have told you 1001 times, stop all this nonsense. This is slow poisoning. This is slow suicide. Nasruddin looked at her and said, please don't exaggerate. You have not told me 1001 times. Maybe a few dozen times, but don't exaggerate. Moreover, I am not in any hurry. So let it be slow poisoning. I am not in a hurry to die. The man and the woman are constantly arguing about each and everything. They never agree about anything. They cannot agree by their very natures. Agreement is not possible. There is always tension. Hence, gay people are really gay. When you see two homosexuals hand in hand going for a morning walk, you can see the joy. You never see that joy between a husband and wife. Impossible. The gay relationship is simple. But because it is simple, because there is no tension in it, no conflict in it, there is no growth either. There is no pain in it. Hence, it is stagnant. There are no more surprises in it. The woman remains always to be discovered for the man, and vice versa. You cannot exhaust discovering a man or a woman. If you belong to the opposite pole, it is an endless discovery. You will never come to a conclusion. Existence is not logical, and it is good. Otherwise, there would have been only death, no life. If God was Aristotelian, there would have been no life at all. There would have been peace all over. Nobody to know it. Nobody to experience it. It is good that God is Hegelian, that He has created polarities. Tao talks about yin and yang. That's its most fundamental approach to understand existence. And you have to go deep into it. There is great attraction between man and woman for the simple reason because they are mysterious to each other. The same thing creates conflict and the same thing creates attraction. The farther away they are, greater the distance between them, more is the attraction between them. In modern societies, in advanced countries particularly, the attraction is disappearing for the simple reason that man and woman are coming so close to each other. They are becoming almost similar. They dress alike. They both have started smoking. They both drink. They both behave in the same way. They both use the same language. The liberation movement has contributed much to this nonsense. The women's liberation movement is teaching women all over the world to be just like men, strong, rough, aggressive. They can be aggressive and they can be rough, but they will lose something immensely valuable. They will lose their feminineness. And the moment they become just like men, there will not be any more mysteries. This is something new happening in the world. It has never happened before. The wise sages of the ancient days always made it clear to the old societies, make man and woman as distinct as possible. Nature makes them distinct, but culture also should help them to be distinct. That does not mean that they are not equal. They are equal, but they are different. They are unique. Equality need not mean similarity. Equality should not be misunderstood for similarity. Similarity is not equality. And if women start becoming like men, they will never be equal to men, remember. The women's liberation movement is going to do some very deep harm to women's cause in the world. And this will be the harm. They will become carbon copies of men. They will have a secondary kind of existence. They will not be real men because they cannot be naturally so aggressive. They can pretend, they can cultivate aggression, They can be rough, but that will be just a facet. Deep down, they will remain soft. And that will create a split in their being. That will create a schizophrenia in their being. They will suffer from a dual personality. And they will lose their mysteriousness. They will argue with men with the same logic but they will be like men and they will become ugly. To be unnatural is to be ugly. To be natural is to be beautiful. I would like them to be equal to men. But the idea of similarity should be dropped. In fact, they should become as dissimilar as possible. They should keep their uniqueness intact. They should become more and more feminine. Then the mystery deepens. And that is the way of existence, the way of Tao. Only one modern psychologist, Carl Gustav Jung, had some insight about this. Taoistic approach. He was the only one in the West who had pondered over and studied Taoism deeply. And he introduced Taoism in his psychology. And he brought Taoism to date. If you want to understand Taoism, it will be good to understand Carl Gustav Jung and his understanding about Taoism. He was moving on the right lines. But after his death, that work has stopped. He had taken only few steps, because Taoism is a vast ocean. He had moved in the right direction, but the work has stopped. It has to be deepened. Many more people have to work to make the insight modern, because the language is old, and sometimes the old language becomes a barrier. For example, reading these sutras, many women here will feel a little offended. But Koswan means no offense. He is simply using an old way, what he can do. That was the way in those days. There is no evaluation in it. He is not saying that masculine is higher and the feminine is lower. That has to be remembered constantly, otherwise you will immediately become closed, particularly women will become close to the sutras. They will not be able to understand. and those women who have been unfortunately associated with women's liberation movement, they will immediately become closed. They will not be able to understand the beauty of the sutras. So for them particularly, I have to remind it that biological masculinity and femininity are not meant, but psychological. A man is not of necessity masculine. A woman is not of necessity feminine. A woman can be masculine. For example, Joan of Arc, or in India, Lakshmi Bai. These women were warriors, great soldiers. They were not feminine at all. Biologically, of course, they were feminine. The body was of the woman, but their very soul was that of man. They have to be counted as masculine. And there have been men, poets, dancers, musicians, singers, painters, who were very feminine, so soft, so round was their being, that physiologically they are men. They may be able to reproduce children. They may be able to become fathers and husbands. But deep down, they are not masculine. Their psychology can only be called feminine. It happens. In fact, it happens more often than you will ever think. Secondly, every man and every woman is also its opposite. Every man, to be alive, carries in the unconscious the feminine principle. Otherwise, there will be no dynamism in his being. There will be no tension, enough tension to keep him alive. He will simply die. There will be no reason for him to live. A certain tension is needed in his being. If the tension becomes too much, he goes mad. If the tension becomes too less, he will be dead. There is a beautiful story in Buddha's life. A great prince became initiated, became a sannyasin of Buddha. He had lived in great luxury his whole life. He was a great sitarist. His name was known all over the country as a great musician. But he became impressed by Buddha's inner music. Maybe His insight into music has helped him to understand Buddha. When Buddha was visiting his capital, he heard him for the first time, fell in love at first sight, renounced his kingdom. Even Buddha wanted him not to do such a great act so impulsively. He told him, wait, think, I will be here for 4 months, because the whole rainy season Buddha never used to move. In the rainy season he will remain in one place. So I am going to be here, there is no hurry. You think over it, 4 months' time, and then you can take sannyas, you can become an initiate. But the young man said, the decision has happened, there is nothing more to think about it. It is now or never. And who knows about tomorrow? And you have been always saying, live in the present. So why you are telling me to wait for 4 months? I may die. You may die. Something may happen. Who knows about the future? I don't want to wait even a single day. His insistence was such that Buddha had to concede. He was initiated. Buddha was a little uncertain about him, whether he will be able to live this life of a beggar. Buddha had known this by his own experience. He himself was a great prince once. He knew what it is to be in luxury, what it is to live in comfort, and what it is to be a beggar on the street. It is a great, arduous phenomenon. But Buddha had taken time. It took him 6 years to become enlightened. And slowly, slowly, he became accustomed of being without a shelter, sometimes without food, without friends, enemies all over, for no reason at all, because he was not hurting anybody. But people are so stupid. They live in such lies that whenever they see a man of truth, they are wounded on their own accord. They feel hurt, insulted. Buddha knew the whole thing is going to be too much for this young man. He felt sorry for him. But he initiated him. And he was surprised, and all other sannyasins were surprised, because the man simply moved to the other extreme. All Buddhist monks used to eat only once a day. That new monk, the ex-prince, started eating only once in 2 days. All Buddhist monks used to sleep under trees. He will sleep under the open sky. Monks used to walk on the roads. He will walk not on the roads, but always on the sides where there were thorns, stones. He was a beautiful man. Within months his body became black. He was very healthy. He became ill. He became lean and thin. His feet became wounded. Many sannyasins came to Buddha and said, something has to be done. That man has gone to the opposite extreme. He is torturing himself. He has become self-destructive. Buddha went to him one night and asked him, Srona was his name. Can I ask you a question? He said, of course, my lord, you can ask any question. I am your disciple. I am here to answer whatsoever you want to know about me. Buddha said, I have heard that when you were a prince, you were a great musician, you used to play on sitar. He said, yes, but that is finished. I have completely forgotten about it. But it is true. I used to play on sitar. That was my hobby, my only hobby. I used to practice at least 8 hours per day. And I had become famous all over the country for that. Buddha said, I have to ask one question. If the strings of your sitar are too tight, what will happen? He said, what will happen? It is simple. You cannot play upon it. They will be broken. Buddha said, another question. If they are too loose, what will happen? Srona said, that too is simple. If they are too loose, no music will be produced out of them because there will be no tension. Buddha said, you are an intelligent person. I need not say anything more to you. Remember, life is also a musical instrument. It needs a certain tension, but only a certain tension. Less than that, and your life is too loose, and there is no music. If the tension is too much, you start breaking down. You start going mad. Remember it. First you have lived a very loose life and you missed the inner music. Now you are living a very tight, uptight life. You are still missing the music. Is not there a way to adjust the strings of the sitar in such a way that they are exactly in the middle, neither loose nor tight, just the right amount of tension, so that music can arise? He said, yes, there is a way. Buddha said, that is what my teaching is. Be exactly in the middle, between the two polarities. Tension has not to disappear completely, otherwise you will be dead. Tension has not to become too much, otherwise you will go mad. And that's what has happened in the whole world. The East has become too loose. Hence there is death, starvation. And the West has become too tight. Hence there is madness, neurosis. The West is breaking down under its own weight. The East has become so lazy and lousy out of its looseness. A certain tension is needed. But there is a state of tension, which is also a state of equilibrium. And that is the whole art of Tao. The equilibrating pulse of the mystical life. The secret. These words in this sutra are not to be understood biologically, physiologically. Each man and each woman also have its opposite within them. If you are a man consciously, then unconsciously there is a woman in you. If you are a woman, then there is a man unconsciously in you. Your conscious and your unconscious are polar opposites. And there is a tension between the two. That tension has to become neither too loose nor too tight. This is the whole art of religion, or the whole science of religion. Tao does not believe in miracles. It believes in scientific methods to transform your life. Allow tasu, chuang tasu, and li tasu were walking together along a forest path one day, when they came upon a fast-flowing river which warred their way. Immediately, Li Tzu sat down on the bank of the river and meditated upon the eternal Tao. 10 minutes later, he stood up and proceeded to walk on the water to the other side. Next, Chuang Tzu sat in the lotus posture for 20 minutes, whereupon he stood up and also walked across the river. Lao Tzu, watching this in amazement, shrugged his shoulders, sat down on the river bank like the others, and meditated for over an hour. Finally, with complete trust in the Tao, he closed his eyes, took one step into the river, and fell in. On the other shore, Chuang Tzu laughed, turned to Li Tzu and said, "Should we tell him where the rocks are?" Tao does not believe in any nonsense. It is very pragmatic, practical, down to earth. A street vendor was trying to sell his product. All day long he would call out, "Try a bottle of my elixir, long life lotion." There was a boy helping him distribute the bottles and taking the money. The vendor kept calling out, "Look, long life lotion, a wonder, gentlemen, a real miracle. Every morning I drink one bottle, and look at me, Don't I look young? I am more than 700 years old. The people were amazed and skeptical. Finally, one of the customers called the boy aside and asked, "Is your boss really over 700 years old?" "I can't guarantee it," answered the boy. Everyone turned to the boy to hear his answer. "Why can't you guarantee?" asked the customer. "Because I have only worked with him for 300 years," answered the boy. All other religions are much more concerned with such stupidities, miracles, wonders, not Tao. Tao is very straight. Hence, there is great future for Tao. When all other religions will be gone down the drain, Tao will still be around, for the simple reason because it will fit with the scientific climate that is growing every day on the earth. It will not only fit with the scientific climate, it will help and nourish it. It will bring new visions to science. Because it does not ask you to believe in anything, it simply wants you to understand. These sutras are not to be believed in. Please try to understand them. And try to understand them putting aside all your prejudices as men and women. The Venerable Master said, "Tao manifests both as the pure and the turbid, both as movement and stillness." Don't be offended by the word turbid. It simply means muddy, not clear, vague. Both are manifestations of Tao. Tao manifests both as the pure, and the word pure does not mean anything moral, virtuous, etc. It has nothing to do with morality. Pure simply means clear, transparent. And turbid means muddy, not clear, vague. These both are Tao's manifestation. The ordinary man is turbid. The Buddha is pure. The man who is sleepy is muddy, cloudy. He is surrounded by much smoke of his own creation. The man who has awakened out of all dreams and desires has a clarity. He has no smoke around himself, no clouds. He is like a sunny day. The sun is there without any clouds. Tao manifests both. And remember, both are Tao. Never forget it. The asleep person is as much divine as the awakened one, as much godly as the awakened one. There is no intrinsic difference. The difference is only in manifestation. One is full of dreams, desires, hence one is turbid. And one is finished with the dreams, has become tired with the dreams, has come to know that they are dreams, and in that very knowing those dreams have dropped on their own accord. Now his eyes are clear. He can see through and through. Tao manifests both as movement and stillness. So there is no need to insist that you should be still. Even in movement, you can experience Tao. You can experience Tao in stillness. There are two possibilities. Buddha sat for years in silence and then he experienced Tao. He calls it Nirvana. That is his name for Tao. And Jalaluddin Rumi danced for years. And then one day it happened while he was dancing. Through dance, he attained to Tao. He calls it God. That is his name for Tao. One can approach either through stillness or through movement. It is because of this fact that in my commune, both kinds of meditations are being used. People are dancing. People are singing. And meditating. People are sitting in silence, zazen, vipassana, and meditating. And one can move from one to another, because both are your possibilities. You can find it in dance, and you can find it in silence, stillness. In fact, your experience will be far more richer if you can find it in both the ways. If you are capable in finding it in dancing and also capable in finding it while sitting silently doing nothing, your experience will be far more richer than the experience of Gautam the Buddha and Jalaluddin Rumi both. Naturally, because you will enter the temple of God from two opposite extremes, from two different paths. You will be more fluid, and you will have known the beauties of both the paths. Because on one path you may come across few things, and on the other path you may come across few other things. Both the paths are full of different wonders. The dancer will come to know few things which the person who is sitting silently will never know. He will reach the ultimate peak, but he will not know few things that happen on the way of dancing. And the same is true about the dancer. He will not know few things which happen only on the way of stillness. my emphasis is that why miss any enrichment that is possible to you? Why not be multidimensional? Why not experience God through as many ways as possible? So that you know all the aspects of God. And in that very knowing, you will know all the religions are unnecessarily arguing against each other. Their arguments are absolutely meaningless. They are talking about the same God, but because they have known different aspects, they are insisting on their own aspect that this is the truth, and the other is saying that just the opposite is the truth. If you ask a Buddhist that can one become enlightened through dancing, he'll immediately say no, and his no will be categorical. He will say it is impossible, because if one can know through dancing, why Buddha sat for years? Was he a fool? He would have danced. If you ask a whirling dervish, the follower of Jalaluddin Rumi, can one find God just by sitting silently, doing nothing? He will say, no, impossible. Absolutely no. Otherwise, why Jalaluddin should have danced? Why should he have worked so hard, dancing day in, day out? When the ultimate flowering happened, he had danced 36 hours continuously, just as Buddha had sat for 7 days continuously, not moving, not even moving his eyelids. Jalaluddin had danced, not even waiting for a single moment, resting for a single moment. A mad dance for 36 hours till he fell down on the ground. But when he opened his eyes, the old man has disappeared. The new was born. The new was already there. He was a totally new person. The Sufi will not agree that just by sitting you can find it. But I say to you, I have found him by both the ways. I have found him through movement, and I have found him through stillness. And I perfectly agree with Kosuan that Tao manifests both as movement and stillness. Heaven is pure, earth is turbid. Obviously. Heaven means absolute clarity. The sky is pure. There is nothing in it. Nothingness is the purest thing. The earth is full of many things. Hence it is turbid. And just the other day I was telling you, you have to be both earthly and unearthly. Because in fact, you are made of both. Something in you is contributed by the earth, by the turbid, and something in you is contributed by the sky, by the pure, by the clear. You are a synthesis of the earth and the sky. up to now, except Tao, all the religions have chosen. Either they have chosen to be very earthly, for example, Judaism is very earthly, or Jainism, which is very unearthly. Jainism has chosen the sky component of your being, and Judaism has chosen the earthly component of your being. But both are half. They are not whole. Something is missing in both. Tao is whole. And in my understanding, in my realization, Tao is the only experience which is holy, because it is whole. Heaven is pure, earth is turbid. That's why I say to you, be a Zorba, but not Zorba the Greek, because then you are just turbid, just earth, just muddy. I say to you, be Zorba the Buddha, not Gautam the Buddha, because to be Gautam the Buddha means you are just a sky, no earth, absolutely otherworldly, belonging to the farther source. Why not be both? When it is possible to be both, why miss anything? Why not use all the opportunities to grow and to be? Heaven moves, earth is still. These are just metaphors. The masculine is pure. Masculine means at the lowest intellectuality, at the highest intelligence. It is clear, intellect is clear. 2 + 2 = 4. It is as clear as that. And the highest form is intelligence. Buddha means one who has attained to the highest form of intelligence. His words are very clear. His words are not at all in any way muddy. You cannot find more clear statements than Buddha's. His statements are not mystic, not esoteric. In fact, he used to say to his disciples, please don't ask any metaphysical questions to me, because they are not needed. They are not going to help. Ask authentic, real questions. Questions that are your problems in life, so that I can help you to solve them. He used to say this story again and again, that once a man was hit by an arrow. He was a philosopher, a great metaphysician. People rushed to him. They wanted to take out the arrow, but he said, wait. First, tell me, whether the arrow is real or illusory. Now that has been one of the most important metaphysical questions in India particularly. Whether the world is real or illusory, real or Maya, whether it is or it only appears so. The metaphysician was asking, out of his old habit, if it is unreal, why bother? If it only appears, what is the point of taking it out? It does not exist. It is like a snake which does not exist. It is only a rope really, but in darkness you have misunderstood it as a snake. So there is no need to kill it. How can you kill a snake which does not exist in the first place? He made people so puzzled by all his metaphysical reasoning that they were at a loss what to do. It was difficult to prove. In fact, it is difficult to prove. Nobody has been able to prove conclusively that the world exists. There is no way to prove it. It may be all illusory. For example, I am talking to you. But how can you prove that you are not dreaming? Many times you dream. Asang writes to me, I am very grateful you come in my dreams. Now it will be difficult for Asang whether right now it is a dream or I am really here. There is no way to decide. In Western philosophy, the man who represents this ideology is Berkeley. He says the whole world is in your idea. It is just an idea. It is in your mind. It does not exist really. It is just like a dream phenomenon. It is made of the same stuff as dreams are made of. He was going for a morning walk with his friend, Dr. Johnson. And Dr. Johnson was a very realistic type of person. When Berkeley told him that this whole world is just an idea, it does not really exist, Johnson got so mad. Mad because he could not prove otherwise. He simply took a big rock and threw it on Berkeley's feet. Berkeley shrieked in pain. He screamed. Blood started oozing out of his feet. And Johnson said, "Now, what do you say?" And Berkeley laughed and he said, "This is all just an idea. My screaming, you're throwing the rock. Even you, Dr. Johnson, are just my idea. I am your idea. You are my idea. We are all ideas. Your rock cannot prove that it is real. Because sometimes I have screamed in my dream. Sometimes rocks have been thrown at me in my dream. Blood has come out in my dreams. So what? What is the difference? It is impossible to disprove such a philosophy. Sankara in India represents such kind of philosophy, and Berkeley represents in the West. They both remain yet unrefuted. Nobody believes in them. I don't think that even they believed in themselves. Otherwise they would have stopped eating, making love, sleeping. Because if it is all dream stuff, why bother? Berkeley continued to make love and produce children. What nonsense. He continued to eat, and when he used to fall ill, he will take medicine. Now, killing one idea by another idea. I don't think they ever believed in themselves. Sankara says that the world is illusory, yet he says renounce it. If it is illusory, why renounce it? What you can renounce? If it is not there in the first place, how can you renounce it? Something that is not can be renounced. And if the world is not, if the scene is not, then where is the seer? Without the seer becomes itself illusory. If there is nothing to renounce, the renouncer becomes illusory itself. They don't believe in their own philosophies, but still they cannot be refuted. There is no way to refute them. Thousands of ways have been tried, but nothing can refute them. For example, Berkeley used to say, when you go out of the room, your furniture in the room, your books in the room, all disappear, because there is nobody to project the idea. Obviously, if you take the projector out, the film will disappear from the walls. There will be no pictures on the walls. Now, how you can prove it? You can say that I can look through the keyhole. He will say, so you have come back through the keyhole. Again, they will appear because the idea is projected through the keyhole. One man worked for years to find out some way, and he went on coming to Berkeley again and again. One day he went with the idea that now I don't think you can deny this. When you are sitting in a car, you don't see the wheels of the car. But the car is moving. The wheels are there. You are not projecting because you are not seeing them. But the car is moving. The movement of the car proves that the wheels are there. Berkeley said, you don't know. That is God's idea. The world is not only my idea, ultimately it is God's idea. It is God's dream. In fact, He is dreaming us too. The driver and the passenger and the car and the wheels. It is impossible to deny such philosophies. They are absurd, but they cannot be refuted. Buddha used to say, people, poor people, villagers gathered and they looked at each other, what to do with this man? Buddha was passing by. He heard the whole story. He went to the philosopher and said, These questions can be answered later on. We can discuss later on at ease. First, let us pull out the arrow, because this arrow can kill you. And if you are alive, we can discuss it later on. And whatsoever you decide later on, whether the arrow is real or unreal, it is up to you. But right now, you don't need philosophical discussion. You need a physician who can pull the arrow, who can take out the poison, who can give you some medicine as a protection. Right now, no metaphysics is going to help you. Okay, if it is unreal, let it be unreal. But later on, we can discuss it. Buddha used to say that the same is the situation of man, every man. You are suffering. So the whole thing is how to pull out the arrow that is creating your suffering. It is not a metaphysical question. His words are very clear, rational, intelligent, comprehensible by the mind. He says only things which can be comprehended by any intelligent person. That's why Buddha has become very important today, because his approach seems to be so intellectual. The masculine is pure, that means the lowest form is intellect, intellectuality, and the highest form is intelligence. The feminine is turbid. Turbid here will mean lowest instinct and the highest intuition. Now the mystics, the Sufis, talk in a totally different way. Their words are not so clear. Their words are vague. Their words are not comprehensible easily. You have to figure out what exactly is their meaning. And that is the state of the feminine mind. But remember, I don't mean biologically. Of course, biologically also, the woman functions more through instinct than through intellect. Many people ask me, why all the Buddhas you talk about have been men? Why not women? For the simple reason that the approach of the feminine mind will be totally different. They cannot be Buddhas. They can be Miras, Magdalens, Lallas, Rabias, but they cannot be Buddhas. Their approach is bound to be different. Mira will not talk in an intellectual way. She will sing. Her singing, her dancing has a totally different flavor. She will not argue. Argument is not the way of the feminine mind. Her argument will be her dance, her ecstatic dance. If you can see her dance, if you can feel her dance, I will not say if you can understand her dance, because dances cannot be understood, they can only be felt. They can only be experienced. Her words will be very instinctive. For example, Freud has condemned very much all the women mystics he knew about. He never knew about Mira, otherwise he would have condemned her the most. He knew about Saint Teresa. He has condemned her because she talks about being married to Christ. Now that is enough for Freud to bring his whole sexual theory in. That's enough. Nothing more is needed. Marriage, that means this woman is suffering from some sexual perversion. She must have repressed her sexuality. And because she cannot have a sexual relationship with a real man, now she is contemplating about an unreal man. Somebody called Christ in the sky, the Son of God. Now she is trying to make a love affair with Christ. It is really a misfortune that Freud never knew about Mira. Had he known, he would have danced himself out of joy. Because Mira uses such allegories that, my Lord, my beloved, when you will be coming, I have prepared the bed. I have prepared the bed with roses. And I am waiting. And the night is passing and you have not come yet. And I am crying and weeping for you. When you will come and make love to me? No. She is not even referring in an indirect way. She is talking directly. Freud would have taken the whole thing literally. That was his technique. He can prove that all these mystics are perverts. In fact, he himself is a pervert. Because he cannot understand the feminine mind at all. That was one of the reasons why Jung has to desert him. For the simple reason that his whole understanding was simply intellectual. There was nothing intuitive in it. And Jung has a more feminine mind, a deeper capacity to feel. All men who have come in contact with women know it, that they function in a very different way. You cannot talk with a woman logically. It is impossible. As if she belongs to some other world, to some other planet. And the same must be the experience of women. They can't understand men. Continuously in their heads, in their intellects, never understanding anything of the heart. Man tries to argue tries to convince the woman logically, but she cannot be convinced. That is not her way. Logic makes no appeal to her. Slowly, slowly, the husband learns that far more important than logic is a rose flower. If you bring a rose flower to your wife, she will understand it more than all your arguments. You can argue for months that I love you, and that won't convince her. Just bring a rose flower, and that will be enough. Her approach is instinctive. Man cannot understand her, because whatsoever she says seems illogical and absurd. Slowly, slowly, husbands start remaining silent. They become deaf. They allow the woman to talk whatsoever nonsense she wants to talk. Let her talk. Who listens? Do you know why God created first the man and then the woman? To allow the poor guy to say at least two words. Overheard at Vrindavan. One sannyasin was saying to another sannyasin, "It took a lot of willpower, but I finally gave up trying to diet." A lot of willpower. Rob told me I was the 8th wonder of the world, said Sir. "What did you say?" asked Pearl. "Not to let me catch him with any of the other 7. "Can you operate a typewriter?" asked the boss to the secretary. "Yes, sir, I use the biblical system." "I never heard of it." "Seek and ye shall find," replies the secretary. Why husbands become henpecked? All husbands become henpecked. In fact, to be a husband means to be a henpecked husband. There are no other kinds. For the simple reason that how long to argue? And it makes no sense. You look foolish to yourself. You are talking to the walls. You argue and the woman cries. You tell her to cool down and let us talk and sit over the table, and she starts throwing things. She slams the door, she breaks cups and saucers. Now what is the point? You cannot argue. There is no possible way to connect, to relate with a woman coolly. That is not possible. It is always hot. Either you follow her or she will create trouble. And from her side, your all arguments are just nonsense. Then there was the guy so henpecked by his wife that when they were in the nudist colony, she told him what not to wear. The man says to the liar, I am going to ask for a divorce. Why? Ask the liar, because my wife is always knitting. But for God's sake, that is no reason to ask for a divorce. Lots of women knit while they are making love. The husband frequently traveled in his work. One day he returned home unexpectedly and found his wife in bed with another man. Enraged, he grabbed a gun and pointed it at the man. The wife screamed, "Don't shoot! Are you going to kill the father of your sons?" The young lady walks into a drugstore and asks, "Do you have intimate deodorants?" "Yes, we do," answers the druggist. "Which kind would you like? Chlorophyll?" "No, sorry, we will receive it tomorrow. Tomorrow I cannot come. Could you give it to my husband?" "How am I going to know who your husband is?" inquires the druggist. "Ah, it is very simple. He is a tall, dark-haired guy with a green mustache." The masculine is active. The feminine is passive. Manifesting from its radical essence, Tao flows forth even to the last of things, bringing forth heaven and earth and all that is in between. The pure is the cause of the turbid and movement of stillness. But don't forget, because of these anecdotes, that Kosuan does not exactly mean that the biological masculine and feminine are synonymous with the ultimate masculine and feminine. In a certain way, yes, they are related, but not totally synonymous. The greatest myth that I have come across is that of mankind. There exists nothing like that. There are as many mankinds as there are men. It is not one kind. Every man is so different from every other that the humanity does not exist. It is just a word, an abstraction. You appear to be similar, but you are not. And that myth has to be thrown away. Only then you can penetrate deeper into the reality of man. No old psychology ever believed that humanity exists. In fact, if we are going to classify, all the ancient psychologists classify man in three divisions. In India, we have divided humanity in three parts: sattva, rajas, tamas. Lao Tse has not given the names, but he also divides humanity in three kinds, exactly the same. These three divisions are also arbitrary. We have to classify to understand. Otherwise, there are as many mankinds as there are men. Every man is a world in himself. But this classification helps to understand many things. Many things which will be impossible to understand without it. So try to understand the classification as clearly as possible. When the highest type of man hears the Tao, truth, they try hard to live in accordance with it. When the mediocre type hears the Tao, they seem to be aware and yet unaware of it. When the lowest type hears the Tao, they break into loud laughter. If it were not laughed at, it would not be Tao. First is sattva, second is rajas, third is tamas. The highest type of man, when he hears about Tao, suddenly feels in tune with it. It is not an intellectual understanding for him. His total being vibrates in a new song. A new music is heard. When he hears about truth, suddenly something fits in. He is no more the same. Just by hearing, he becomes totally a different type of man. Not that he has to bring his intellect to understand it, because that will be delaying understanding. The highest type of man understands immediately. No time gap. If he hears about truth, just the very hearing of the truth, and he has understood. Not that he has brought his intelligence to understand it. No, that will be postponing. His total being understands it, not only the intellect part, not only his soul, not only his mind, but even his body vibrates in a new unknown way. A new dance has entered into his being. Now he can never be the same. Once he has heard about the truth, he can never be the old again. A new journey has started. Now nothing can be done. He has to move. He has heard about light and he has been living in darkness. Now unless he achieves, there will be no rest for him. He will become deeply discontented. He has heard that a different type of existence is possible. Now, unless he reaches it, attains it, he cannot be at ease, he cannot be at home anywhere. Wherever he will be, the constant call from the unknown will be knocking at the door continuously. Waking, he will hear it, sleeping, he will hear it, dreaming, and the knock will be there, he will hear it. Eating he will hear it, walking he will hear it, in the shop, in the market he will hear it. It will be continuously a haunting phenomena. Just by hearing, Mahavir has said that there are two types of people, and Jains have not understood it at all. A very revolutionary thought, completely lost by misunderstanding. He has said there are two types of people. One, who become muktas, who become liberated just by hearing. They are called sravakas. The word sravak means who has heard. And just by hearing is transformed. Then there is a second type, who cannot become liberated just by hearing. They have to practice it. They are sadhus. Now, a great misunderstanding exists. The sravak has to bow down before the sadhu. In fact, just the opposite should be the case. Because the sravak is a greater soul. Just by hearing, he has attained. And the sadhu has to practice. Just by hearing, he could not attain. His perceptivity is not so keen. His sensitivity is dull. He is not a first-rate mind. A second-rate mind. A mediocre mind. And this you can watch. If you go and look at the sadhus of Jains, you can immediately feel they are dull. Something of the intelligence lacking. A thing which can be understood immediately, they are taking for years to practice about it. Their perception is not total. They are going the hard way because they don't have the intelligence to choose the most easiest, direct, straight way, simple, spontaneous. They are doing thousands and one things to attain that which can be attained with a perceptive mind immediately without doing anything. In fact, a man who becomes aware just by hearing has a greater quality of consciousness than a man who has to work for it for years, do sadhana, practice this and that. He is a dullard, a mediocre mind. I have been observing thousands of people. I have met all types of people, but sadhus have always appeared to me a little dull, and I will always worry, what is the matter? Why they look a little dull, a little mediocre? Their intelligence is not of the highest quality. And then by and by I understood the reason is this. They could not attain to it just by hearing. They don't have that intelligence. That's why Krishnamurti goes on saying there is no need to do anything. In fact, for the first-rate mind, there is no need to do anything. Just by hearing, by right listening, one attains. But where to find the first-rate mind? It is very rare. Unless the Krishnamurti comes to listen to Krishnamurti, it won't happen. But why a Krishnamurti should go to listen to a Krishnamurti? It is absurd. It has no meaning. A man who has that kind of perceptivity can become awakened just by listening to the song of a bird. just by listening to the breeze passing through the trees, just by listening the sound of the water flowing. That's enough. Because from everywhere the divine speaks. Whatsoever you hear, you have heard the divine, if you are perceptive. Nothing else exists. All sounds are His. All message is His. Everywhere is His signature. For the frustrated mind, the path is not a path at all. He simply enters into the temple without any path. There is no need for any bridge. Lao Tzu says, when the highest type of man hears the Tao, immediate perception, immediate understanding, just by hearing, just by looking at the master who has attained, just by hearing his word, or just by hearing his breathing, silent, peaceful, sitting by his side, he understands. Once they understand, then they are not trying to attain truth. Then they are simply trying to refine their mechanism. They have understood the truth, that it exists. They have heard about it. Hindus call their scriptures Srutis. The word Sruti means that which has been heard. All the scriptures are that which has been heard. Once a man of the first-rate intelligence hears truth, he understands it. Once it happened, a Sufi master suddenly called one of the disciples. Many disciples were sitting in the hall. He called only one that come near to me, and he was standing near the window. It was full moon night. All the disciples watched in wonder why he has called one. And then the old man indicated something outside the window to the young man and said, "Look." And from that day that young man changed completely. Others asked, "What has happened?" Because there was nothing we know. Only full moon night. Full moon was there, of course. Night was beautiful, of course. But what has happened seems to be just out of proportion. You are completely transformed. What has happened? The young man said, "I heard the master. And I was so silent because he has called me. I was so without thoughts. So peaceful that when he indicated the moon, something opened inside me, a window. I had a perception which I had never had. I looked at the moon with new eyes. I looked at the moonlight with a new being. Of course, I have seen the view from the very far away state of my mind. And I will have to try hard to reach it. But now I know it exists. Now I know it is a certainty. Now there is no doubt. I will have to go to that state. Because I have looked through the eyes of the master. Those eyes are not mine. He gave me for a single moment. I borrowed them. I have looked through his being. It is not my being. That window is not mine. That was his window. He allowed me to look through it, but now I know a different type of existence is possible. Not only possible, is absolutely certain. Now it may take many lives for me to reach that goal, but the goal is certain. No doubt exists in me now. Now doubt cannot disturb. Now my journey is clear. When the highest type of man hears the Tao, truth, they try hard to live in accordance with it. They hear, they understand, then they try hard to live in accordance with it. They have looked through the window of the Master. They have become certain. Now it is the absolute fact. It is not a philosophy, not a metaphysics. It is existential. They have felt it. They have known it. But they will have to go a long way, so that the same perception becomes their own. They have heard truth. They have understood it. But they will have to move a long way, so that the truth becomes their being. The highest type try hard to live in accordance with it. Not that by living in accordance with it and trying hard one achieves it. No. Just by trying hard nobody achieves it. But by trying hard, by and by one comes to feel that the effort itself in the final stages of the transformation is a barrier. By trying hard one comes to know that even trying hard is a barrier. One drops it. Because when you are trying hard to live in accordance with Tao, that life cannot be a spontaneous life. It can be only a forced phenomena, disciplined, not a freedom. It will become like a bondage. And by trying hard, no one can achieve that which is already there. But by trying hard, one achieves to this understanding that even effort is a barrier, a very subtle barrier. Because all efforts are of the ego. Even the desire to achieve truth comes from the ego. One drops that too. But remember, one can drop effort only when one has done the effort to its utmost. You cannot say, if that is the case, then I should drop it from the very beginning. Why do it? You will miss the whole point. That's what is happening to those who have been listening to Krishnamurti. He says, whatsoever he is saying is perfectly true, that no effort is needed. It is right, but it is right only for those who have been doing the effort with their total being very hard. It is true only for those. They can drop it. To become artlessly artful is not possible for those who have not moved through any discipline. Finally, an artist has to become completely oblivious of his art. He should forget whatsoever he has learned. But you can forget only that which you have learned. If an artist remains an artist, effortful, then his art is not perfect. In Zen, they use many methods to teach people meditation. They use art also, painting, calligraphy, and other things. A student will learn painting for 10 years, 12 years, unless he becomes absolutely technical. Not even a single error in the technology of the art. When he becomes perfectly technical, then the master says, now you drop it. For 2-3 years you completely forget. Throw your brushes. Forget anything that you know about painting. And when you have forgotten it completely, then come to me. 2, 3, 4, 5, sometimes even more time is needed to forget. It is very difficult. Difficult first to learn a thing. Then more difficult when you have learned it to unlearn it. And the second part is very, very essential, fundamental. Otherwise you will be a technician, not an artist. It is said it happened that a great archer trained his disciple to the very perfection of archery. And then he told him, now you forget everything about it. For 20 years, the disciple used to come and go to the master, but the master will not say anything. So the disciple has to wait patiently. By and by he completely forgot everything about archery. 20 years is a long time. He had become almost as old as the master. One day he came, and when he entered the master's room, he saw a bow, and he could not recognize what it is. The master came near him, embraced the disciple, and said, now you have become a perfect archer. You have forgotten even the bow. Now just go out and just look at the flying birds, and just the idea that they should drop and they will drop. And the archer went out. He couldn't believe it. He looked at the birds flying, almost a dozen birds, and they fell immediately on the ground. The master says, now no more to do it. I was just showing you, when one forgets the technique, then only one becomes perfect. Now the bow and arrow is not needed. That is needed only for amateurs. A perfect painter does not need the brush and the canvas. A perfect musician does not need the sitar or the violin or the guitar. No. That is for the amateur. I have come across a very old musician. He is dead now. He was 110 years old. Ravi Shankar is his disciple. He could create music with anything whatsoever. He will be passing and he will find two rocks and he can create music by two rocks. He will find a piece of iron and he will start playing with it. And you can hear beautiful music you have never heard. This was a musician. Now, even his touch is musical. If he touches you, you will see that he has touched the innermost instrument of your inner harmony and music. Suddenly you will start vibrating. When anything becomes perfect, the effort that you have put to learn it has to be forgotten. Otherwise, the very effort remains heavy on the head. So it is not that they try hard to live in accordance with it, that they achieve it. No, they try hard to live in accordance with it. Then by and by, they start understanding that to live in accordance with nature, no effort is needed. It is like floating in the water. But anybody cannot float. First you have to learn swimming. Don't go to the river, otherwise you will be drowned. You have to learn swimming. And when a swimmer becomes perfect, he need not swim. He can just be in the river floating. As if he is lying in his bed, he can lie in the river. Now he has learned how to be in accordance with the river. Now the river cannot drown him. Now he has no more enmity with the river. In fact, he no more exists separate from the river. A perfect swimmer becomes part of the river. He is a wave in the river. How can the river destroy the wave? Now he floats in accordance with the river. He is no more there fighting, resisting, doing something. He is in tune with the river. Then he can simply float. But don't try it unless you know swimming. Otherwise you will be drowned. The same happens with Tao. You do hard effort to live in accordance with the truth, then by and by you understand that your hard effort helps a little but hinders a lot. That it is not a fight with nature. To live in accordance is to be in a let go. To live in accordance with nature is to be one with the nature. There is no need to struggle. Effort is a struggle. Effort is you are trying to do something according to you. Science is effort. Religion is effortlessness. Science is violence with nature. That's why scientists continuously talk in terms of conflict, conquering. Even a man like Bertrand Russell, of such great intelligence, has written a book about nature being conquered by science. The conquest of nature. It is a fight. As if the nature is your enemy and you have to dominate it. Science is a deep politics with nature, a deep war, enmity. Religion is not a fight at all. In fact, it is to understand that you are part of nature. How can the part fight with the whole? And if the part tries to fight with the whole and then becomes anxiety ridden, what is wrong in it? It is natural. If the part tries to fight with the whole, if my hand tries to fight with my whole body, the hand will go ill. Because how the hand can fight with the body? The body supplies the blood, the body supplies the nourishment. How can you fight with the body? The hand fighting with the body, it is foolish. Man fighting with nature is foolish. you can live only in accordance with nature. Religion is a surrender. Science is a war. Science strengthens the ego. And the whole problem for religion is how to drop the ego. Through effort it cannot be dropped. So remember this. When the highest type of man hears the Tao, truth, they try hard to live in accordance with it. That is their first standpoint. Once they understand, they hear and they feel, they taste, they feel the affinity with it. And they start hard effort to live accordingly. But by and by, as they grow in it, they start understanding that effort is not needed, rather effortlessness. Finally they drop effort and become one with nature. Then they are no more part of humanity, they become superhuman. Then they are no more part of the struggling humanity. They are no more struggling. They appear like men, but they are no more men. When you come across a man like Lao Tse, he is not a man. When you come across Buddha, he is not a man. That's why we have called such people avatars, just to make a distinction from ordinary humanity. We have called Jesus Son of God. Not that he is not son of man, he is son of man. But we have to make a distinction. If we call Jesus man, then what we will call the ordinary humanity? Then we will have to find something subhuman for the ordinary humanity. To call ourselves human, we have to call Jesus superhuman. We have to call Buddha a avatar, a Krishna a god. These are just symbolic gestures to show that even the first type of man, the man of sattva, transcends when he drops all effort and moves in accordance with nature. Somebody asked Lao Tse, how you attained? He said, I was sitting under a tree and I had done all that can be done, all that is humanly possible. And I was completely frustrated. Much has happened through it, but not all. Something was lacking and missing. And the missing link was the most difficult and elusive. Then I was sitting under a tree, and a dry leaf fell from the tree. Slowly. And moved in the wind. The wind was going north, the leaf moved north, then the wind changed its course, it started moving towards south. The wind stopped, the leaf fell down on the earth, with not a single complaint, with no struggle on its own part, no direction of its own. If the wind was going south, it was going south. If the wind was going north, it was going north. If the wind stopped, it fell down on the earth and rested beautifully. Then again there was wind, and again it rose high in the sky. But there was no problem. Suddenly I understood. The message hit home. From that day I became a dry leaf. And the missing link, which was so elusive, was no more elusive. The missing link was only this, that you can attain many things through effort, but you cannot attain Tao through effort. Finally, you have to leave effort. Suddenly, everything fits. you are in accordance, then you don't give direction. Then you are no more a director. Then you don't say to the winds, go south, because I am on the journey towards south. Then you don't have any destination. Then the destiny of the whole is your destiny. Then you are not separate. Then you don't think in terms of individuality. You have become part of the whole. Wherever the whole is going, you are going. If the whole changes the mind, you change the mind. If the whole starts the journey, it is beautiful. If the whole runs, you run with it. That is what in accordance means. Not a bit of mind of your own. You have become a no mind. Now the whole lives through you, moves through you, moves you, lives you. Now you don't breathe. The whole breathes you. Then everything is a benediction, a blessing. How can you be tense then? Worried for what? All worries exist because you have brought an individual destiny in your mind against the destiny of the whole. You are moving up current. This is the whole secret of your failure. You are moving up current. Then you are worried, tense, in anguish, anxiety, almost going mad. Anybody will go mad if you are moving up current. The fight is so hard and so meaningless. And one day you will feel tired. And then it will look like a frustration, a failure. The wise man leaves this up current nonsense. He simply allows the river to take him wheresoever it is going. If it is going anywhere, good. If it is not going anywhere, good. Then suddenly you are still silent. Only then the real meditation happens, never before it, when all effort is dropped. But you have to do the effort first, otherwise you will never understand that it has to be dropped. You can drop it only if you have been in it. And from the very beginning, it is almost impossible for you to be so wise to drop it. How can you drop a thing which you don't have? When the highest type of man hears the Tao, the dry heart, to live in accordance with it, when the mediocre type hears the Tao, the people of Rajas, they seem to be aware and yet unaware of it. That's what the mediocre mind is. A little aware, a little understanding, and a little ununderstanding, a little part lighted, and a little part in darkness, divided. To be divided is to be mediocre. To be divided against yourself is to be mediocre. Because it dissipates your energy. It can never allow you to be an overflowing, celebrating existence. If you are trying to create a fight between your right and left hand, how can you be happy? The very fight will kill you. And there is going to be no result out of it, because how the left can win or the right can win? Both hands are yours. Any type of inner conflict makes you mediocre. And those who teach you to be divided are your enemies. They say this is bad and that is good. Immediately division enters. They say this is lower, that is higher. Immediately division enters. They say this is sin and that is virtue. Immediately, division enters. You are split. The whole humanity is schizophrenic. And everybody has become mediocre. To be one is to be blissful. To be divided is to be in misery. To be one is to be in heaven. To be divided is to be in hell. More divided, greater will be the hell. And you are just a crowd, not only two, many. Psychologists say, man has become polypsychic. He has not one mind, he has many minds now. In small matters also you have many minds. To eat this or to eat that. Sitting in a restaurant looking at the menu, you are polypsychic. Whether to order for this or for that. As if you have lost all possibilities of decision, of being decisive. Because only one can be decisive who is one, a unit. How can you be decisive? One voice says this, another voice immediately contradicts and says that. One voice says go to the east, another says go to the west. You are pulled against yourself in so many directions. Your whole life will be just a sad failure. A long, long tale of frustration and nothing else. A tale told by an idiot, full of fury and noise, signifying nothing. Significance is possible only when there is a unison within. The highest type of man can attain unity. The lowest type also has a certain type of unity, but the mediocre is in the greatest danger, the middler. You can see wise persons like Buddha or Lao Tse in unity. A bliss surrounds them. They move surrounded by a subtle ecstasy. If you look at them, you can see they are drunk with the divine. They walk on the earth, but they are not here. But the same type of glimpse, sometimes you can feel around an idiot also. A stupid man, absolutely stupid. A certain innocence surrounds him. He laughs. And you can have a glimpse of the saint in the idiot. Because he is also one. He is not a saint. He has not attained anything. But at least he is not divided. A saint has gone beyond mind. An idiot is below mind. In one thing they are equal. That is, they both don't have any minds. Vast differences are there, but one similarity is also there. So if you don't understand, sometimes a saint can look like an idiot, and sometimes in your ignorance you can worship an idiot for a saint. I have come across many idiots being worshipped. They have a certain quality. At least they are one. They don't have many minds. They don't have mind at all. They have no thoughts. I lived in a town for many years. Just near that town, there was a saint, very famous. People used to come from all over India. And he was a perfect idiot. But he had a certain beauty around him. No anxiety. No problems. Few problems would have existed for him, but because people started worshipping him, even those problems were not there. People will bring food and everything for him. So even that problem was not there. They made a beautiful house for him. So no problem for the idiot existed. And he was absolutely idiotic. If you watched him, you could see that he doesn't understand a thing. His half body was almost paralyzed. It happens to idiotic persons many times. They are not even capable to manage their own bodies. He will defecate wherever he was sitting. But people will think that he is a Paramhans, a great soul who has attained to such height where no difference exists. He will defecate and in the same place he will start eating things. No difference. But I went to see that man many times. I watched him very closely. He was absolutely idiotic. He could not utter a single word. But people thought he has taken silence, a vow of silence for his whole life. There was no glimmer in his eyes of any alertness, but a similarity. People have been deceived many times. Of course, idiots can't deceive you. It is on your own gullibility. You are deceived by your own self. And many times it has happened that very, very rare souls have been thought to be idiotic. Because there again, you see that something like the idiot is happening. Idiot is one. The superhuman being is one. And then there is the middle part, which is the greatest part in the world. You will be surprised to know about a finding scientists have done, and that is that humanity exists almost 98% people are mediocre. 1% are the geniuses and 1% are the idiots. It seems there is a certain balance. 1% idiots, 1% geniuses, and 98% humanity just in the middle. The greatest part of humanity is mediocre. The mediocre part, says Lao Tse, seems to be aware and yet unaware of it. If you talk about truth, the mediocre mind understands it intellectually, but does not understand it totally. He says, yes, I can understand what you are saying, but still I miss something. What do you mean? The word is heard, the meaning is lost. He finds that he can understand intellectually. He is an educated man. He may be a graduate, a PhD even. He understands whatsoever you are saying because he understands language. But he feels that something is being lost. He understands the word, but the word is not the message. Message is something subtle. It can come with the word, but it is not the word. The word is like a flower. And the meaning is like the fragrance that surrounds it. If your nose is not functioning well, I can give you a flower, but I cannot give you the fragrance. If your mind is not functioning totally, I can give you the word, but I cannot give you the meaning. Because meaning has to be detected by you, decoded by you. I can give you the flower because that is nothing a problem. But how can I give you the fragrance? If your nose is not functioning, if your nose is dead, insensitive, then nothing can be done. I can give you 1,001 flowers, but the fragrance will not happen. The mediocre mind understands the word, misses the meaning. He goes on listening to Tao. If there is a man, he has a certain attraction towards that man. He feels that there is something, a little aware. He suspects there is something, but he cannot be certain. He understands, and yet he understands not. Many people come to me, they say that whatsoever you say, we understand, but nothing happens. We have understood everything you have said. We have read your books many, many times. We have underlined almost every line, but nothing is happening. I can give you the flower, but how can I give you the fragrance? You have to cleanse your nose. You have to become more sensitive. And that is where meditation can be helpful. It makes you more sensitive, more alert. It pushes you towards the first type of man, the sattva. And by, you start feeling. Not only understanding, but you start feeling. When I say something about love, you understand the word, you understand what I am saying, but your heart doesn't respond. How can you understand something about love if your heart doesn't respond? A feeling is needed. I don't mean that you should become sentimental. No, sentimentality is not feeling. Sentimentality is the false coin. There are people who can weep and cry for nothing. And they think they are the feeling types. They are not. They are sentimental. Sentimentality is not feeling. Feeling is a very mature quality. Sentimentality is a very immature quality. A man of feeling will do something. A man of sentimentality will create even more trouble. For example, somebody is dead or somebody is ill. The man of feeling will rush to the hospital, will try to help the man who is dying, and the man of sentimentality will start crying and weeping. He will create more trouble for the dying man. He will not allow even for him to die in silence. Sentimentality is a chaos. Feeling is a very, very substantial growth. When I talk about love, if you have feeling, then not only your head understands, but your heart starts throbbing in a different way. Then the fragrance reaches you. Meditations can help you because they are cathartic. They will throw out all the dust and dirt that you have collected within you. That is stopping your sensitivity. All doors of perception are covered with dirt in you. You would like to see rightly, but there are so many suppressed tears, they won't allow you a clear eye. You would like to smell the flowers, but you cannot, because the whole civilization has been suppressing the nose. You may not be aware about it. That is the most suppressed part of the body, the nose. Man has lost smell almost completely. Even horses, dogs are more sensitive than men. What has happened to man's nose? Why it has gone dead? There is a subtle mechanism working behind it. Because smell is deeply concerned and connected with sex. Have you seen animals smelling each other before they make love? They will never make love unless they smell. Because through smell they feel that their body energies meet or not, whether they are for each other or not. That smelling is a feeler. A dog moves smells. If the female dog suits with his sense of feeling and sense of smell, only then he makes any effort. Otherwise they move on their separate ways. He is not worried at all. Finished. That female dog is not for him, he is not for her. Smell is the most sexual sense in the body. And when civilization decided to suppress sex, automatically civilization decided to suppress smell also. Whenever a woman wants to make love, suddenly she starts throwing subtle smells around her. And that will be dangerous in a civilized world where sex is not accepted. You pass on the street and you are passing with your wife, and your wife, looking at some other man, starts throwing the smell, and you feel the smell immediately. Then the wife cannot deceive you. She cannot say that I had not even looked at that man. Your nose is completely closed. You don't smell. The wife himself cannot smell that her body is throwing a certain smell. Neither the man to whom she has become suddenly attracted smells her. Things are beautifully settled. No trouble arises. So if you really want that you should smell the flower also, not only the flower you should carry, but the smell also you should enjoy, then you will have to come to a more natural state of non-repressed sexuality. Otherwise it will not be possible. And if all the five senses are covered with dust and dirt and suppressed, it makes the mediocre mind then. Because mind is nothing but the collective reservoir of all the five senses, then you are mediocre. Then you can go on learning more and more. You can go on becoming more and more scholarly, but you will remain a fool because you will not be alive. Have you watched the phenomena that pundits are the most dead people you can ever see? Professors, scholars are the most dead people. They don't see, they don't smell, they don't taste. They are almost dead. Their all senses are dead. Only their head functions. alone, without any support from the body. If you cut their body, they will not be worried. Only don't disturb their head. They will be, on the contrary, very happy if the head can function without the body. Then they can go on and on in their scholarly trips, and no trouble from the body, no illness disturbs, no hunger disturbs. I have heard about Edison, a very intellectual giant, but completely dead in his senses. One day it happened that he was doing some mathematical work. His wife came to call him for the breakfast, but it was an order from him that if he is too much engaged, he should not be disturbed for such petty things. So she came and left the breakfast near him. So whenever his work is finished, he will look at the breakfast and he will eat. Then a friend came, and Edison continued involved in his work so much, and the friend also knew that he is not to be disturbed. So what to do in the meanwhile? He found the breakfast, so he ate it. Pushed aside the things and waited. Then Edison looked at him, looked at the finished breakfast, and he said to the friend, "You came a little late, I have already finished the breakfast." A scholar does not know even his hunger. He lives in the head. Scholars are always mediocres, perfect mediocres. And the problem for the mediocre is that he understands. That deceives him. Because he thinks he understands, finished, and he doesn't understand a bit. He remains unaware. His understanding is only of the head, not of the total being. And unless understanding is of the total being, it is not understanding at all. Intellectual understanding is not understanding at all. It is a misnomer. When the mediocre type hears the Tao, they seem to be aware and yet unaware of it. When the lowest type hears the Tao, they break into loud laughter. The lowest type thinks this truth, Tao, is some sort of a joke. He is so profane, so shallow, anything about the depth does not appeal him, and the laughter is a protection. When the shallow man, the lowest type, hears about truth, he laughs. He laughs that now you are going funny. He knows well that there is no truth at all. Nothing like truth exists. This is just an invention of cunning people to exploit other people. He laughs loudly. That laughter is a protection, because he is also afraid the thing may exist. Through laughter, he brushes it away. He throws it away. Through laughter, he is showing his derision, his condemnation. He is seeing the whole thing is nonsense. At the most, you can laugh at it and nothing else. You will come across the lowest type everywhere.
If a lowest type sees a sannyasin, he will laugh that this man has gone mad. One more man lost to humanity, gone mad. If the lowest man sees you meditating, he will laugh. He will think that this man seems to be a little eccentric. What are you doing? Why wasting your time? The lowest man, if sometimes comes to me, he comes just to see other people meditating so he can laugh. And he can think very good about himself that he is not so mad or foolish as these people are. Says Lao Tse, if it were not laughed at, it would not be Tao. Lao Tse says, if the third type does not laugh when it hears about truth, it will not be truth. So this is a definite indication. Whenever truth is asserted, the lowest type will immediately laugh. It shows two things, certainly. One, that truth has been asserted, and second, that the third, the lowest man, has heard about it. Between truth and the third, the lowest, happens laughter. Between the mediocre and the truth happens an intellectual type of understanding. Between the first type and truth happens a deep understanding of his total being. His total being throbs with an unknown adventure. A door has opened. He is entering in a new world. For the second type of man, the door opens, but only in the mind. A thought door, not a real door, in which you cannot enter. At the most, you can philosophize about it. Think about it. The first type of man enters the door. The second type of man, at the most, thinks about it and goes on thinking. The third type of man does not even think. He laughs loudly and everything is finished at that. Then he forgets. The third type of man is the tamas. The third type of man, if he wants to reach truth, will have to become the second type. The second type will have to become the first type. Otherwise, there is no way. Therefore, there is the established saying, who understands Tao seems dull of comprehension. This third type and the second type, they are the greatest part of humanity. The first type is a rare flower. Because of this greatest part of humanity, the majority, who understands Tao seems dull of comprehension. A real man of understanding seems dull of comprehension to these people of the first and second type. Who is advanced in Tao seems to slip backwards. Who advances towards truth seems to slip backwards. People in the world will say, what are you doing? You were achieving so many things, now you are slipping back. You were just going to be made a cabinet minister, and what are you doing? Taken sannyas? Falling back. You were just near the goal. You would have achieved great wealth and power and prestige. And what are you doing? Destroying your own life's work and effort? Slipping back? Who is advanced in Tao seems to slip backwards. Who moves on the even Tao path seems to go up and down. To the greater majority, the man of truth is someone with whom something has gone wrong. Who is not normal? Who is abnormal? Jesus is abnormal, Lao Tse is abnormal, Krishna is abnormal, They don't fulfill the standard of the normality. If the vast humanity is normal, then of course Laozi is abnormal. If in the world first type of man existed, there will be no government, no need. It will be an anarchy. There will be no need to rule, because people will live by their inner discipline. There will be no need for the courts and the police. In fact, no need to govern a man who understands. He lives in accordance with Tao. Because of the second type, in the world exists democracy. And because of the third type, in the world exists dictatorship. If the third type is too forceful, then any democracy will turn into dictatorship anytime. Now in India this is happening right now. Jayaprakash is appealing the third type. His appeal is only for the third type. And he will condemn Indira if she becomes a dictator. But he will be the cause. Because he is provoking the third type, the lowest element in society. The gundas, the hooligans. He is provoking them. If they are provoked, then immediately any democracy has to become dictatorial. Because for the third type, only a dictatorship can maintain the order, otherwise not. A democracy is too good for them. Remember this. If the first type exists, then democracy will turn into an anarchist type of government automatically. That is the best world, where no government is needed, or almost no government. Just for small things, government is needed, otherwise not. For postal service, for railway, that for these things government is needed, because an organization is needed for efficiency. Otherwise, there is no need. With the lowest dictatorship, with the mediocre democracy. And whenever a country moves towards dictatorship, know well, now the third type of element has become active, which is dangerous. In fact, the first type of element should become more and more active. First type of element should exist more and more, so that even democracy is not needed. Superior character appears like hollow. It is not hollow. It is filled with infinite. But you cannot see the infinity. To you it seems empty. A man of divine character looks hollow. He has nothing. Because whatsoever you can count, he has not that. He has no bank balance. He has no power in this world. He is absolutely powerless. But you cannot see to his inner power that he has a glory totally different, of another kind and quality, that he has a light, riches, treasures. But to see them, you will have to become the first type. Even to have a glimpse of them, at least you will have to become the second type. For the third type, the man of Tao is an empty vessel. He has nothing. Seer white appears like tarnished. He is so white that you cannot see it. Your eyes are trained only for tarnished things. Great character appears like insufficient. Solid character appears like infirm. Pure worth appears like contaminated. He is so pure, you cannot feel him, because you can feel only that which you have. The same can feel the same. I have heard about one Maharaja. He was a drunkard. The whole night he will see dances and prostitutes and indulge and drink. And by the morning he will go to sleep. The whole day he will sleep. That was the rule, not the exception, for the Maharajas. One day it happened that he was not feeling sleepy. It was just Brahma Muhurt, early morning, the sun has not risen. He came out of his palace. It was rare. The guard in the garden had not ever seen him coming out, because by the morning was the time for him to go to sleep. But he was not feeling sleepy, so he came out. He smelled a strange smell around. He asked the guard, "What type of smell is this? This bad smell. From where this bad smell is coming?" The guard said, "Your honor, my lord, this bad smell is coming from the morning fresh air. A man who has lived only a night life, surrounded by smoke, drinks, dirty and ugly women, does not know the smell of fresh air. It feels bad. If you live too much in dark, you become allergic to light. If you live too much in impurity, you become allergic to purity." Says Lao Tse, pure worth appears like contaminated. So don't be afraid if you appear mad to other people. Don't be afraid when you are meditating if you see others laughing. If they don't laugh, it won't be meditation at all. Don't be afraid of intellectuals who say that listen to everybody but do always your own. Don't be bothered by them. If you hear the truth, if you feel the truth, then take the risk and go on the greatest adventure, the adventure of truth, the adventure to seek God, the adventure to know oneself. Enough for today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.